Technology.ie, episode 69.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 69, for August 29th, 2013, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichoin. Dias Mariva, Kid Fautcher, Ovishtak, hello and welcome to Technology.ie. This is Conor Muinichoin in Ireland and over in Washington, D.C. Hi, Michaela Nealon.
Morning, Con, how's it going?
How are things? What kind of morning is it there?
I actually don't know, because I haven't had a chance to look outside.
How's the weather been?
Very, very warm. Quite humid. It rained a little bit yesterday, but I mean, it's, you know, very, very humid. I think temperature-wise, high 20s into the 30s. So it's damn hot.
And I mean, I asked you. There's lots going on around. Of course, Seb, you were saying that there's the Martin Luther King "I Have a Dream" commemoration and that going on as well. You haven't really noticed much of that activity except for its impact on traffic, I think you were saying.
Well, what I keep seeing is entourages of, you know, police cars and everything else, because I'm staying about 4 to 5 minute walk from the White House, and I'm having meetings kind of behind the White House.
And an extraordinary photograph you posted on Facebook and elsewhere, I think, as well. You're looking in Barack Obama's front door.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the view from the, and we'll post a link to this, people have probably seen it, we'll post a link to it elsewhere as well. But that is the view from the ICANN offices in Washington, D.C.
It's actually from the roof of the building.
Okay.
So the ICANN offices are on the fourth floor of the building. If you go up to the roof, which is, I think it's got offices up there as well, not ICANN, so I don't know who's there. Yeah. There's this great big patio-type thing, and from there you have a fantastic view looking over the White House and a few other things. I mean, it's just a kind of a different angle of Washington, D.C. I mean, you know, you walk around near the White House, though, I mean, the security is insane. I mean, there's, you know, roads and streets are blocked off. There's visible, very heavy visible security. And I know from talking to people here that, you know, there's invisible security, but you find out about it fairly quickly if you do anything that they don't like.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, there's a lot of tension at the moment let's talk about the Syrian Electronic Army for a moment, Michaela, if you like. There's a lot of tension, obviously, yeah, in relation to that as well. A DNS hacking the other day of the New York Times, most notably, but they got Twitter as well.
Yeah, this was one of those things. I mean, you know, we've seen a lot of these hijacks over the last year or so, where hacker of some kind access to either registrar or registry and changes the name servers for a domain name, or changes the who is for a domain name, or changes both. In this instance, what happened was interesting, because both the New York Times and Twitter had their who is records changed. In other words, the listed contacts for the registrant, the admin contact, all that were changed. But because Twitter is using a service called Registry Lock, what it means, even though you could make the changes you want in a control panel on the registrar side until the cows came home, it would never have gone up to the registry. Whereas in the case of NewYorkTimes.com, they weren't using the service. So when those changes were made, for real.
I did hear people talking about Twitter being affected, but you're saying that actually didn't take effect, is what you're saying?
From my understanding of what happened, Twitter's Whois records were affected, but the actual DNS records weren't. I mean, they weren't able to change the name server records.
Okay. So this is a kind of an omission, really, on the part of the New York Times, really, Michaela, isn't it? And you send me a link from domainnamewire.com. pointing out that this this registry lock would have cost only $50 a year. Sorry, $50 a month.
Yeah, I mean, it's a service that a lot of registrars offer, including ourselves. And you know, see, the thing about it is this: is that you know, the registry, not all registries offer it, and the service is quite manual. So, let's say, for example, if we wanted to put, say, conumwienercon.com or whatever on this registry lock, there'd be all sorts of passwords and specified users and secret handshakes and all this kind of thing agreed between us and you and between us and the registry in order to turn on these locks or remove these locks, so that it's completely outside the automated. This is a very, very manual, highly secure way of locking down changes on a domain name. And because of that, it's not particularly expensive if you put it into perspective, but it, you know, you're looking at paying probably maybe $50 a month, depending on who you're dealing with. I mean, we charge, I think, about €30 a month to do it. Other companies might charge more. Other companies might bundle that in with a whole bunch of other services for brand owners. So, I mean, you know, if you look at it within like the context of providing a whole suite of services to a big brand, you know, this is just a small little thing, and you know, they just get that as part of all the services.
What do you make of these Syrian hackers, Michele? Syria wouldn't exactly be noted for its technological expertise. Is this something that has been, perhaps, are these people who've been recruited and trained and paid by the Syrian government? Is it what do we know about the Syrian Electronic Army?
I mean, this they've done a number of hacks over the last while. But you know, the thing with a lot of this stuff is that you've got hackers, you've got people. Some of them are, you know, hardcore hackers that get in and they do a lot of stuff. And I suppose if they're doing it really well, you don't really know about it because you know they're able to siphon off a lot of information without anybody being aware. But a lot of these other things would be much more common stuff you see from across all of these groups is defacements. So it's a kind of it's the digital equivalent of graffiti on a website. Kind of show that you know we were able to get in here, or we were able, if we might not be able to get into your website or web server, we were able to get into some other part somewhere else and point your website at another service. I mean, there's so many of them, Colin, and I don't get too hung up on a particular group. I mean, what you look at is, you know, what are they going after? How are they going after it? And do you need to be worried about it? And you know, the thing is, for you know, the certain websites and certain services run by certain entities. So you know, Twitter, Facebook, New York Times, Google, Amazon, all these guys, they're big targets.
Yeah.
You know, you want to send a message, you go for one of those, or you go for, you know, whitehouse.gov, or you go for you know, the Irish government website or the department of this or the department of that. I mean, it's like with Anonymous. You know, there's no point in Anonymous or any of these guys taking out my personal blog or your personal blog.
No.
I mean, they might deface it as part of a mass defacement, but who gives a damn if one of our websites is offline for a day or two? It's not a political statement.
No, it's not. And equally, you know, it's one thing to be able to hack a DNS and to redirect a domain to your own server or to another IP address or something like that. It's another thing altogether to be able to deal with the actual traffic that is going to send your way.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the other one. I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, if you look at, say, the when the Google.ie hijack occurred, most people were unable to see the defaced, in inverted commas, website put up by the hackers, mainly because it just couldn't take the level of traffic. Some people were. I mean, we managed to get a screenshot of it.
Mm.
But, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens. I mean, sure, you take out a major site like that. I mean, the amount of traffic that they're doing is it's going to knock over, you know, that $4 a month hosting account that you're using for capturing the traffic.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. No, it was definitely interesting, all right, during the week in relation to that. Let's move on, Michele. Some other things news-wise happening this week. I want to actually come back just very briefly. You're in Washington. You're there for an ICANN meeting. What's going on there this week?
This is not something, as I said to you, I think over instant message or something over the last couple, when we were talking about doing this recording today, it's not terribly exciting or sexy. It's the Who Is stuff that I've been working on with a bunch of others from around the globe for the last few months. So initially, we have meetings and everything in Durban, in South Africa. And we'll be meeting again. We'll be at the meeting in Buenos Aires in Argentina in November. But what we're doing is we were having 2 days of face-to-face meetings, which are pretty damn intense. We start from like 8:30 in the morning and go through till about 5:30 in the evening with very little kind of respite in the middle. And due to a number of different circumstances and way things panned out, we ended up having actually 3 full days of meetings. So ICANN has offices in Washington, D.C. and L.A., so the offices in Washington, D.C. are about a 3 to 5 minute walk from the hotel I'm staying in.
Okay.
And so we've taken over various rooms there and have been meeting. So yesterday, for example, we met with representatives from Interpol, Europol, FBI, U.S. government. We also had the DEA and a couple of others talking to us about what law enforcement agencies want to do with what they want to do and what they like to do, what they currently do with domain data. And, you know, we've met informally and formally with other groups, you know, intellectual property types. We've met with, we've had conference calls with some of the non-commercial users. And, you know, it's one of these things is that, you know, Who Is for GTLD's ComNet, Org Info, that kind of thing. There's this kind of problem. It's been set up so everybody has free, unfettered access to it. But as a result of which, the quality of the data is absolutely terrible. And, you know, in light of PRISM and the all these revelations, you know, do you really want to give law enforcement free unfettered access to accurate data? And I mean, obviously law enforcement want it. But you know, others would have concerns. And you know, how do you get it to a point where the overall quality of the data is good? People are able to access it when they need to for legitimate reasons, but at the same time you don't have a situation where people are able to abuse that access. And we don't have answers yet. I mean, we're still working through things. So we're meeting today, and I have to head off shortly because I have that meeting starting in just under an hour's time. And, you know, we'll be discussing that and discussing various aspects of it all day today again.
All right.
Go
ahead.
I said not terribly exciting, I'm afraid.
No, but important nonetheless, Michele, as you point out, and it does have perhaps wider implications than people realise. Your Wi-Fi is warbling there. Your connection is warbling just a little bit, but it's surprisingly good, I'd say, for hotel connections. I must say I'm impressed with that. What have you brought with you, Michele, from a point of view of technology? I know you normally, when we record from your home in Carlow, you use you have a microphone that you use. Did you bring that with you? Or are you just using the embedded microphone on your Mac?
Just the embedded microphone on my MacBook Air.
That's pretty good now.
What I'll do is to help with the Wi-Fi, I'll kill off my email here in the background.
No, it's pretty good actually.
I don't have anything special here, and the hotel's Wi-Fi, I'm staying this time, it's a Hampton Inn, which is part of the Hilton Group. it's just the standard free Wi-Fi in the hotel. I mean, yeah. Nothing special.
It's better than we've been used to, I have to say as well. Just looking at the chat room as well, we're streaming this live as well, as we did last week. Experimentally, we just tweeted the link to this before we started. It's over on digiculture.ie where I occasionally run a live stream. There's a couple of people in the chat room, and M. Sowden says he wants some insight into how DNS is the new weak spot, I think he said. Do you think it is a new the new weak spot, or is it just something that that, you know, as we were discussing a few minutes ago, Michele, you can redirect a domain name, sure, but in terms of what you can actually do with that, then you're quite limited.
I think the thing is this: I mean, if you're able to take control of the name servers and the DNS records for a domain name or a service, because I mean, you know, then it's not always the same thing. Then you have godlike control. You have godlike power. Hmm. So let's say, for argument's sake, you take Google. Google.com gaining access to the DNS records, the name servers, and everything else of Google.com. I mean, sure, it might be possible, but you're talking a major kind of full-on, coordinated, complex attack. I mean, if you think of it this way, it would be like trying to get into, say, the Bank of England. Sorry, one second. Damn, sorry, that's having an alarm. I forgot about it. Beg your pardon. It'd be like trying to do a major jewel heist. I mean, if you think of, you know, coordinated efforts, and you know there'd be blueprints everywhere, and there'd be all sorts of cool tech. Not easy. Now,
but it was too easy for them to hack the New York Times, Michele. It really was, in a way.
But what that you do, say you take, say, with Google, what you do is you look at, say, okay, Google like to have a Google.countrycode in every single country. So what you do there is you go and you say, right, which of these country codes has weak security? So you don't go to the Googleplex. You don't bother trying to vault over the wall and get into Google. What you do is you go after either the registrar or you go after the registry.
And that's what happened recently in Ireland.
It happened in Ireland, and it happened in several other countries. Now, in the case of something like, say, the New York Times. Now, I don't have all the details because, you know, it's the usual thing where you get these kind of conflicting reports, and I'm always very wary about making broad sweeping statements when certain things aren't 100% clear. But from what I've read, it sounds like the New York Times was registered via a reseller or agent or something of Melbourne IT, which was the registrar in question. And what it sounds like is that the compromise could have happened at their level as opposed to at the Melbourne IT level. But that doesn't really matter, because the problem there was that once the name servers were changed, you were able to redirect the traffic.
Yeah.
And once you're able to redirect the traffic, it's game over. Now, in the case of you know, name server changes like that, I mean, there's caching, there's all sorts of other things, and what you see happening in the background is that people start reaching out to sysadmins and network operators around the world once they've managed to take back control and get stuff fixed up. Oh, that guy there on the chat has sent a link to an article over on...
Yeah, Anatomy of a Hack. It's a GigaOM article on this, and we'll post that, a link to that in with the notes as well. Yeah, how it actually happened. Yeah.
I mean, what he says there, you know, the final paragraph, which is very important. Like, for huge sites like Twitter, the New York Times, the Huffington Post, ISPs are likely to notice the attack and make the effort to clear the DNS server's cache. So this is, you know, so when you redirect it, and once you're aware that the change is illegitimate, illegal, whatever way you want to call it, and it's fixed, you'll see somebody will go, hey, look, you know, can you guys reload your DNS, clear your DNS? And it's just, you know, the DNS attacks, it's part of the reason why, you know, the there's been a lot of energy and focus put into DNSSEC, DANE, and various other technologies because, you know, in the case of Ireland, we had the situation there a couple of years back where one of the large ISPs, which we won't bother naming this time around because we beat up on them enough as it is, their DNS servers, their resolvers for their users were compromised. So what was happening is that people were typing in, you know, www.aib.ie going to the bank or www.paypal.com or paypal.ie, and instead of going to AIB or PayPal, they were being taken to something else.
Now that's the kind of thing I find more worrying in a way, Michele, than defacing the New York Times or whatever it might be, because that really is for a phishing attack, if you like. That is a really powerful thing, because one of the things that people are told to guard against phishing, obviously, is to check the domain name of what you're logging into.
Well, that's what's called those kind of attacks where the resolver, the DNS resolver, being used by that the ISP users are accessing. If that's compromised and bad data is inserted into those servers, that's what you call a man in the middle attack.
Yeah.
Now, the way to deal with man in the middle attacks is, I mean, obviously, first off, you know, make sure that all those DNS servers are patched, they're up to date, that they're not susceptible to a lot of attacks. Because one of the problems that was happening a lot of the time was that there were thousands and thousands of DNS servers around the globe that hadn't been updated for years.
Yeah.
And the reason it hadn't been updated for years was very, very simple. DNS is incredibly important, but at the same time, it's very, very simple in certain ways. So if you've got a DNS server that just works, why the hell would you bother, you know, taking it offline to upgrade it? And so a lot of them didn't. There were ones running very old versions of DNS software, which were susceptible to attacks. And then there was, it was an entire thing, an entire development within security circles, and you know, the uber geek DNS guys, like Dr. Steve Crocker, who is actually at this meeting today. And they developed this thing called DNSSEC, and DNSSEC is basically, it's like secure certs for DNS. In other words, you digitally sign the .com zone. You digitally sign. You then, as the registrant or somebody who works for the registrant of a domain name, you would get the records for your domain digitally signed. So then, if the ISP's resolvers, DNS servers, are checking, they'll go, oh, okay, yeah, that's valid, that's signed, that's correct. So this is, you know, paypal.com. And then if the signature is incorrect or not signed and not valid and it doesn't validate, it's like, oh, that's not legitimate. So that's one of the things that people have done. That's to fight the man in the middle thing. But the kind of thing where this guy there in the chat asking, is there anything ICANN can do about it all? It's not really ICANN's role in some respects. ICANN can kind of facilitate this, and, you know, VeriSign, Neustar, and even within the CCTLDs, URID, all offer this registry lock service where you can get that high level of security and, you know, validation and what have you for changes to a domain and name servers. And within ICANN's realm and remit, there's been a lot of work done of strengthening the policies around domain name transfers and changes, so that if, for example, a domain name is hijacked, which happens, so let's say somebody compromises the registrar account, takes control of the account and then transfers the domain to another registrar, and then sometimes they do that weeks and weeks later. There are now better processes in place in order to be able to undo that quickly.
Let's move on, Michele, because I know you're under pressure this morning. You've got to get some breakfast before you go to your ICANN meetings. I'm going to play you a little bit of audio, Michele, and if you have a listen to this, I think you may have heard it before. You don't see the video that goes with it, but it's in relation to a certain figure who retired from his position as CEO of a major technology company this week.
Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Ballmer!
I'm looking at the pictures here, Michele. I'm sure you're probably picturing them in your mind's eye, or perhaps it's too early in the morning for that. Of course, I'm talking about the famous Monkey Boy performance by Steve Ballmer at an in-house Microsoft all-hands type meeting. I presume you remember that, Michele. Will that be Steve Ballmer's legacy?
I honestly don't know, but I mean, if you look at some of the... There was a video I saw there shortly after this announcement about Ballmer's stepping down, and what they've done. I don't know, I'm not too sure when the video was done, but it was a comparison between Ballmer and Microsoft and Jobs and Apple. And the comparison, it was just, it's incredible. So you're like, you've got, you know, Ballmer doing this kind of, these crazy kind of jumping onto the stage and bouncing around, looking like he's about to have a heart attack, and the sweat's pouring off him. And he looks like a man possessed. I mean, I think, you know, some kind of horror film kind of scenario. Oh, my God, Steve Ballmer, he's been possessed by the devil. And there's the other one that was at the developer's speech, which, I mean, I don't think actually speech isn't even the right word. I mean, the developer's thing. And then you see that in contrast with Jobs, which is like this wonderfully calm, really slick presentation, and hey, we're gonna change the world. Here's a new thing, you know. It's like
in a role as a figurehead, if you like, for a cultural, if you like, an operating system and computing ideology. As a Mac user, Michele, does it give you a certain smug satisfaction to compare Jobs to Ballmer?
No, because, you know, for me, it's not. I don't really care. I'm not interested that much. I mean, okay, sure. Yeah. Apple is cool. Jobs was fascinating. Bill Gates was incredible. Was very, very smart. And, you know, you could like him, love him, hate him. It didn't matter. Ultimately, I don't take Bill Gates or any of the others home with me in the evening.
No. No, it's about the technology.
Well, I wouldn't want to either.
Yeah.
The technology, the device. I mean, I have a Mac. I have several Macs. They work. They don't blue screen on me. The software in general is of a particular quality. You know, so I don't care.
It's not about the cult of personality, Michele, and your point is well made. It's about the technology, it's about the products. And indeed, in many respects, it's about the business as well. I'm going to post a link there. I don't know if you had a chance to look to a Motley Fool article, Michele, but I've taken two quotes out of it, which I put into the notes as well. And the first of those is that on the surface, it suggests, I should say the headline here is Steve Ballmer deserves more credit than he's getting, is the headline here from the Motley Fool. And the first quote is like, on the surface of things, under Bill Gates, Microsoft brought the world the PC, turned janitors into millionaires. Under Ballmer, it brought us the Zune and a cumulative shareholder return of -23%. It doesn't look good from that point of view, Michele. And there has been a lot of criticism, has there not, of his leadership and his management of the company.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, that's in some respects, I think that's just so. It's one of those things. I mean, it's very easy to look at that. But I mean, at the same time,
do you think that's fair?
Well, not entirely, because if you look at what's happened in the last few years, Microsoft has had to go in against, compete against companies that weren't around that much under Gates. I mean, they might have existed, but they weren't competing head to head with Microsoft. Microsoft is now competing against Google. on multiple levels. I mean, Microsoft, so you've got Google.com versus Bing.com, so that's one part of it. Microsoft has tried a few different things and has failed. It's had multiple versions of its Windows operating system, and some have been greeted with open arms and have been welcomed. Others haven't. At the same time, you look at, say, in the mobile space, Windows Mobile, it may not be as popular as Android, but it's gaining ground. I mean, it's not a complete disaster.
It is gaining ground with huge expense, Michele, and huge investment that Microsoft have put into it. Interesting that you mention operating systems there as well, because I know that he did an interview. I think it was with Mary Jo Foley in the United States, and she asked him what was his greatest regret of his tenure, and it was quite, you know, he had no problem singling it out. Really, it was the operating system, which ultimately was released in a watered down version as Vista. I forget the code name for it. It was long something. Long Bottom comes to mind, but I know that's not it. But that was going to be the post XP, if you like, for Windows. There was great hopes for it. We were hearing about all kinds of features that were going to be built in, and then it turned out they couldn't build it. They brought us Vista, which was an absolute disaster from a business point of view, Michele, and from a technical point of view, a really horrible piece of software. It's been difficult. How would you compare them? You've mentioned Google. What about their comparison with Apple, who have seen their share price really go through the roof over the same period?
Well, you know, Apple's a totally different animal. I mean, Apple went from being a very small player to being quite a big player, both in terms of mobile, and it invented its own spaces. I mean, the iPad Mini. I mean, sure, tablets as a concept aren't a uniquely Apple thing, but Apple took ownership of that. Mm. iTunes kind of dominates certain parts of them, to the thing around, you know, media and everything else. And, you know, I go to meetings now and I look around the room, and almost every single person sitting at the table is using some kind of Mac. Mm. Whereas a few years ago, the Mac was one of those things that you associated with multimedia, you associated with print designers, you associated with people who had a lot of extra cash floating around. You wouldn't have expected anybody to go to a meeting with a Mac and you know, for that to be normal. It's almost the opposite. If you turn up for a meeting with a Windows machine, we all look at you.
I'm that guy, Michele. But yeah, no, I know. In terms of the mind share and the market share that Apple have got in that space of time, there's no question about it. You could say, I suppose, that it was Microsoft's to lose. Being in the position they were, the market share that they had, they really couldn't increase it. And they were, you know, they were, the only way to go was down. Hard to know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm to be perfectly honest, It's hard to know.
Yeah. Very briefly, Michele, there's M. Souden again in our chat room has another comment in there. I don't know if that's something you want to comment on, or is it of interest, or do we have time at this stage? We might come back to it again if you like.
Let's see. I'm reading this quite quickly.
I'll read it out while you're skimming over it. Last year, a former ICANN board person, Susan Crawford, visited Ireland. She's an open access, open internet, high speed for all person who wrote a book. She was on Obama's FCC transition team, and her talk was about how broadband access is like a utility and should be treated like electricity and water. This person wants to know, do you, Michele, I presume, see Ireland nationalising a fibre network? That's a big question.
Well, we already kind of did in some respects. I mean, if you look at what happened with the MANs, as in the metropolitan area networks, that are built around some towns. I'm not even sure which ones at this stage.
They are, and the interesting thing is a lot of them don't have any backhaul. They're there and they're just waiting to be lit up. But that's another story.
But quite a few of them have been lit.
Yeah.
But I mean, this kind of thing where, you know, it's easy, in inverted commas, to say, oh, you know, internet connectivity and this and that should be a right or should be a privilege and all that kind of thing. But the reality is, you know, the costs of doing all that, I mean, who's going to pay for it?
Yeah.
Remember when we spoke months and months back about the government's grand plans for providing high-speed internet access to everybody?
Most of which seems to be, I think, based on mobile providers rolling out LTE, I think is what it's essentially about. But it does seem very impressive when you look at it on paper. It's, and in fairness, its grand plans are right, Michele, but they have quite a modest budget laid out for it.
Perhaps, well, that's the problem.
Perhaps it's too like modest.
You can't go off and, you know, roll out masses of bandwidth and masses of connectivity outside the big urban centres unless you have the money to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on, Michele. I know you're in a hurry this morning and you want to get to your meeting and get some breakfast before you do. I want to talk to you about Kevin Spacey and Netflix in just a moment. But before we do that, anything you want to mention this week in terms of what your company Black Knight are doing?
Well, we've made a couple of announcements, and we're going to be making more because, you know, there's all sorts of stuff going on. We've been sharing photos of the data center build on Facebook and via Instagram, and hopefully there'll be more of that in the next couple of weeks as we move forward and you know, finalize stuff. James put out something there, I think it was on Monday, maybe. We're now offering cPanel as an option for on cloud and also for dedicated servers. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what cPanel is another hosting control panel. It's for Linux servers only. They have a Windows thing, but it's called something else, which is, I'm not even too sure it's commercially available yet. A lot of people like cPanel. They're comfortable with it because a lot of the hosting companies in the States have been using cPanel for years. Some people like it, some people don't. I mean, some of the feedback we've had actually is that some people prefer Plesk. Mm. And, you know, hey, you know, they both...
It's all about choice.
Yeah, it's about choice. You want to have cPanel, fine, you can have cPanel.
Absolutely. And you've got a whole load of new videos, of course, as well. Tutorial videos on cPanel have been added as well, I think, and documentation related to that as well. Well, let's give a plug to domainoffers.me as well while we're at it, Michele.
Of course. All the current offers are over on domainoffers.me.
Excellent.
And if you follow us on Twitter and Facebook and check out our blog, other offers and things will pop up there. Sometimes they're limited for, they're only available for a couple of hours and we might not put them anywhere else.
I'm looking at your Instagram account as well here, Michele. Cool stuff with the new pods being installed for the data centre and that as well. And people can check out. We'll link to all of that as well from technology.ie. Now, I just want to, before you go, Michele, I'm going to bring up this video from Kevin Spacey. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it yet.
I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen it. Okay, we'll just grab a quick extract out of it in which he talks about...
Clearly the success of the Netflix model, releasing the entire season of House of Cards at once, proved one thing. The audience wants the control. They want the freedom. If they want to binge, as they've been doing on House of Cards and lots of other shows, then we should let them binge. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have stopped me on the street and said, thanks, you sucked 3 days out of my life.
It's very impressive. It's from a speech that Kevin Spacey gave in Edinburgh at the James McTaggart Memorial Lecture, which was on in Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Television Festival last week. And is very interesting indeed. The points I took out of it, really, Michele, he talks about the pilot system in the United States, which we don't really suffer so much here. We get the shows a bit later and they've been, we get the ones that survive, I think, that culling of the pilot system in the States. But definitely in terms of what he's talking about, he says there's no difference between content for the generation that lives now, that's coming up now. Television executives may not be catching on to this, but it doesn't matter whether you watch a movie in a theatre or on an iPad. It doesn't matter whether you watch a TV series on Netflix or whether you watch it on TV and broadcast at a particular time. This is a no-brainer for people like yourself and myself, Michele, isn't it?
Well, I mean, this is it. I mean, it's all about choice. I mean, what Spacey's speech, it's good. It's very knowledgeable, but it's also hilarious.
Very entertaining.
Kevin Spacey. I mean, it's very entertaining. It's very engaging, and he's saying, you know, these people want the choice. They want the freedom to choose. If If somebody wants to watch the entire series back to back, then they'll do it. And, you know, facilitate them, let them do it legally. And it goes on a bit about, I think, I'm not sure whether he mentions the music industry or not. So I can't remember whether he does or not. But it's a very nice recognition of how that, you know, the digital delivery model, where you're able to do that, you're able to give people an entire season, an entire series, or multiple series, and let them binge. That works. I mean, I don't watch television, in traditional television. I actually tried to do it last night here in the hotel room, and I actually gave up, because anything I wanted to watch either wasn't starting for an hour or two, or I had just missed it.
Yeah.
I end up watching and consuming more on my Apple TV or my iPad. I'll download a couple of movies via iTunes, you know, either buy them or rent them, and then I use Netflix. So, you know, I don't consume TV the way I would have done a few years ago. I mean, why would I?
No, there's no question about it. And the next generation coming up, I've mentioned my kids before, Michele, but they nearly don't get it when you tell them, no, you can't watch iCarly yet because it hasn't actually been broadcast yet. You'll have to wait until 5 o'clock or whatever. It's, you know, they have it set to record and all that, but they don't always grasp the fact that TV stations run by a schedule, because they certainly don't anymore, and their generation doesn't. Michele, we'll wrap it up. I'm going to let you go and get your breakfast. What's the breakfast like in the hotel?
Not the best. Not the best.
You don't get
the expanded polystyrene bowls and everything else are a little bit depressing, I think.
Yeah. Oh well. Well, listen. Have a great day in Washington DC. Give Barack Obama a wave for me, and we'll see you next week. We'll talk to you next week. I guess you're back in Ireland again.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, yeah. Right. I'm leaving here Sunday night, so we're back in Dublin Monday morning.
Okay. Shout out to our listeners in the chat room as well, especially to M. Seldon, who was made a few contributions there from the chat room, and thanks to anyone else who checked out the stream. We'll continue our experiments with that as well. And Michele, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks, Colin.